And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Joe Rex Road, how are you? What's going on?
Doing all right. Stayed up late to watch the Dubs continue to drub the Mavs.
That was good rhyming there. That was good.
Thank you. So that series isn't all that good. I think the other one's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think Edmonton is interesting.
Connor McDavid is an absolute freak. Just a freak. It's unbelievable what he's doing. Michelle, how are you? What's going on?
Doing good, guys. I was at Double Dogs last night. A lot of Edmonton fans.
Oh, yeah?
All of a sudden, we were sitting, and the game just starts, and we're like, turn. Oh, it's 1-0. Oh, it's 2-0. Oh, now it's 4-0.
Wow.
Which one?
Who knew there were a lot of Edmonton fans?
Just the one on in Hillsborough Village, the one that we all went together.
Yeah, okay.
But doing good this morning, guys. You know, got back from Pittsburgh at like 6:30 a.m. yesterday. So, pretty much slept all day.
Yeah,
but that's
good,
all right.
Good time in Pittsburgh.
So much fun. So much fun.
The Steel City.
That's right, little Iron City. You have some IC Light. Iron City beer.
Oh no,
man. See, I should have said that. I should have said that on the front end.
Yeah, you should have.
Got to have a little IC.
Yeah, you should have told me beforehand.
Yeah, next time.
Because the odds of me doing it, Joe, come on, let's think. Probably not.
Oh, man. What a weekend in sports it was. You want to start NBA or you want to start NHL? It's up to you.
Start NBA. Yeah.
Okay, let's start NBA. Miami Heat, big time win the other night. They take a 2-1 series lead in Boston. Kyle Lowry back in the game. But it was really the Bam Adebayo show the other night on Saturday night. Heat win on the road. Jason Tatum was awful in that game. Could not shoot, couldn't hit anything. Heat defended him well, but that's a big win by Miami on the road with now a chance in game four. If they go up 3-1, Celtics are in a world of hurt there. So that's a pretty big game coming up for the Celtics.
If they go up 3-1, like how long are we going to have to wait for the finals? Those teams are going to be sitting there for like, right? I mean, I think they have like a set like – little window that they're going to start, that they want to start it, right?
Yeah.
Which obviously takes into account the longest possible series. There may be some serious downtime in the NBA coming up.
Could be. How about those Warriors? I don't think the Mavs have it in them. I think they're going to get swept. I just want to point out, I said that Friday. They're going to get swept. It was only one game at that time.
Yeah, it might be. No, that's a good call by you. I thought the Mavs would get them in this one or at least it'd be better. It'd be a better game. They're just Luka's great. Luka's kind of like an 80s NBA star, man. He reminds me of Kelly Trepuka. Luka is Trepuka. Yeah, he's better than Kelly Trepuka. But Trepuka, he had 50-point nights, and he gave up 53. And Luka is, especially late in these games, like they're just like, please, whoever's got Luka on him, you go after him. And then they're just jacking up these threes. They got some shooters that are in their heads right now. And they just, you bring off Jordan Poole and all of a sudden he can just come out there and hit a 28 footer for you.
Yeah.
Or Kevon Looney and what he's doing. You know, the big three, Steph, Clay, Draymond. But those role players are really stepping up. Now, Otto Porter is hurt and that's troublesome with Peyton and Porter now. Those are both important guys. So that could mean something in the next series, which, by the way, according to this, is starting on Thursday, June 2nd, period, I guess. So there you go. So we may be sitting here for, about a week.
Yeah.
About a week with no hoops.
Just both teams practicing.
But that's not bad for hockey, right?
It's not bad for hockey. Now, Heat Celtics is a long way from over. Like, I fully expect Boston to win in game four. Would be my guess. That's just the way. I think that one's going 6 or 7.
I could see it. Yeah, I could see that.
So
you don't want to be overconfident as a Heat fan.
I do not want to be overconfident.
I get it. It's fine.
We'll see what happens on that front. Stanley Cup playoffs. How about those Edmonton Oilers? They're showing it up on the screen right now. Like Edmonton deserves a lot of credit for what they're doing. Evander Kane, big night last night.
Hat trick in the second.
But it's Connor McDavid is driving the bus right now. He's unbelievable what he's doing out there. Like I've always kind of figured like at some point, his play alone is just going to propel them on some run. And
maybe watch.
I don't know
right
that it's for sure happening this year, but they're up 2-1 against Calgary. I still think Calgary's a better team than they are. But McDavid is just single-handedly dragging them with him. And
look at that.
It's unbelievable what he can do out
there.
We're
watching the highlights as we talk.
I've said this before. I don't know if I've said it on here before. But, you know, just talking to, like, Brent Peterson and some hockey people. You know, I didn't grow up. I didn't watch Gretzky in his heyday. That was before my time. I've seen Crosby. I've seen Datsyuk. I've seen all these really good guys. I didn't watch a whole lot of Mario Lemieux because he was before my time as well.
He's a beast.
Connor McDavid is the best player I've ever seen play hockey. It's unbelievable how good he is. And there were people talking about this last night, and I don't know. I mean, there's a couple different options you could go down. Is he the best athlete at his sport currently in the world? And I think he is. I think Connor McDavid is the best athlete relative to his sport in the entire planet.
That's a good question. That's a really interesting question. Like, nothing jumps up where I'm screaming like, no way, that's so dumb. So, no, it's actually absurd, too, to just think, and you bring up Gretzky, you know, that Edmonton would have both of these guys. Yeah. You're talking about just all-time, like, take it in as you get to watch this guy play in his prime. I mean, the goal he had in, I guess it would have been game two, right? The goal he had in game two.
Where he kicked it to himself. Come on. It's unbelievable.
Come on. No, it's absurd. And it's fun. I mean, if they – I mean, frankly, like, I'm just more interested in Colorado-Edmonton than I am in Colorado-Calgary.
Yes.
You know? No offense to Calgary, but it's kind of cool.
Future National Predator Johnny Gaudreau? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and so if they do make the conversation, because that's the thing, too, in this perpetual argument with Preds fans about the Preds and, like, You know, there's like tanking, trying to get this great player. You know, again, you're not going to get a McDavid, almost for sure. But, or, you know, it's like, well, yeah, but what have they ever done? Well, now I think they may be about to at least go to the conference final, which would at least sort of tell you, yeah, it's good to have a McDavid. It's good to have a Draisaitl. You know, they added Kane. That seems to be working out okay for them. I think they probably have more runs in them ahead, too.
I think there's a chance that could happen. Colorado up 2-1 against St. Louis. St. Louis, opportunity the other night to win that game and go up 2-1. Colorado played really well, and St. Louis, unfortunately, lost Jordan Binnington in that game. Looks like he's going to be out the rest of the series. Kind of a weird play where there's a collision in front and Kadri's involved, and every time Kadri's involved with a controversial play, people are going crazy. It looked like on the TNT interview after the game that Binnington threw a water bottle at him in the middle of the interview, which was amazing. But it looks like he's going to be out the rest of the series. So it's the Ville Husso show in St. Louis. So may not end well for the Blues.
Yeah, I think you hit it exactly. If it wasn't Kadri, I don't even know. Would we be talking about that play?
Probably not.
It looked like really bang-bang to me. Now apparently he's getting death threats, so...
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's one of those. I mean, frankly, it's like Draymond. You know, I mean, last night I saw a flagrant one committed by Dallas. It was like, really? If that's going to be a common foul, cool. But it's not called that way normally. No. But if that was Draymond, it's a flagrant two. You know, that's how it goes with some people. And some people earn that. He has earned that with a lot of plays that are questionable. Kadri has earned it too. So I'm not saying that there isn't, like, extra suspicion warranted when something like that happens. I just don't think that was actually a dirty play.
No, I don't think so either. But Blues fans are very upset about it. I can tell you this.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Well, they can carry those cries into the offseason.
They will, because that very well may end up happening very quickly for the Blues. Tampa Bay, they're up 3-0 on Florida. I had hope that the Panthers could make it a series and go on the road and win. But when you have wide-open nets, got to put them in there. And Tampa Bay dominated that game. But Huberto, it's just kind of the story of the series. Could not have more of a wide open net on like a cross ice pass and just send it about 6 feet wide. And I was just like, oh boy, okay.
They're in their heads.
They're
completely
in their heads. And I said this last week, Andre Vasilevsky being dialed in is a scary place to be for the rest of the league. And right now, that dude is dialed in. And it was interesting. I think Greg Wyshynski put this up. And I guess Huberto was talking after the game and said, like, eventually one of those shots, he's going to let in one goal and it's going to spiral on him. And Wyshynski was like, huh, have you seen him play the last couple of years? I'm going to doubt that. So
spiral.
The Panthers are toast. They're done.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I at least – that was the series I was most looking forward to.
Me too.
and it's just not a
total
series.
Dud.
However, I think Rangers-Canes has potential.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Rangers were right there, both games in Carolina. I mean, Carolina is so far a team that's just incredible at home in the playoffs and not great at away from home, yep. right? But the Rangers right there with them. I think we may be looking at a Game 7 kind of series there.
A little bit of spiciness at the end of that game yesterday, and Gerard Gallant not very happy about it after the game. So
could I love see when some, he gets mad.
Oh, I love when he gets mad, too. Now, we've seen this, and honestly, Brenda Moore does this a little bit more than personally I like, the complaining about the officiating stuff. And he did that last year against the Predators, too, and I think it's like a tactic of, all right, I'm going to make this public, and then we're going to start to get calls coming the other way. So Brendan Moore's done that a lot, not just against the Predators. When Gallant gets fired up, it's pretty funny.
Yeah,
he was mad.
It takes
yesterday.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, he's pretty even keel for
he's
most.
He's yelling
gruff,
at Tony D'Angelo coming off the ice, yeah.
Gotta like it. It's the playoffs, baby.
It is the playoffs. We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Row, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get into the state of Vols and Vandy baseball coming up next. Take your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Row here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, another sweep for Tony Vitello and the Tennessee baseball team. They get it done at Mississippi State. They scored approximately 3,000 runs on Thursday, which we talked about on Friday, and then they finished it off over the weekend with a weekend sweep of the Bulldogs. So that is yet another sweep. They finished the regular season, I think it was 49-7 was the final tally of the regular season. Pretty good stuff from Tony Vitello and company. And now that conversation has creeped back up, and you know, Mississippi State's coach is talking about it. There's lots of talk about it on the SEC Network broadcast over the weekend. Could this be the best college baseball team ever? Now is the time of the year where you've got to finish the job and prove it if you're Tennessee. But you talk about a heck of a regular season. That one's going to be tough for Tony Vitello, I think, to ever top.
Yeah, incredible. Talk about a rough weekend for the two teams that played in the championship series, Mississippi Oof. State and Vanderbilt. But we'll get to Vanderbilt in a minute. Vanderbilt, by the way, 26-3 stands as the best SEC outcome ever, and that team did not win at all. 25-5 for the Vols, 49-7. I mean, I got to find this. Someone sent this out. What they led the SEC in, and again, the SEC is the premier college baseball conference in America. Everybody cares about it, invests in it. There's talent galore, and basically, okay, yeah, this is actually a Wes Rucker tweet. So this is what they led the SEC in. Batting average, slugging, OBP, OPS, runs, scored runs allowed, hits, RBI, homers, triples, doubles, total bases, walks drawn, walks allowed, ERA, opponent BA, strikeouts thrown, and fielding percentage.
That's pretty good.
Every aspect
formula.
Of baseball, they were the best of the SEC, basically.
Yes.
So, I think it's going to be fun, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. The pressure is going to be on. What first you have Hoover. It's Hoover this week. You know, I think the SEC tournament's cool, but it's also like it's a little bit anticlimactic, I
it
guess.
Is.
You know? I mean, for Tennessee, it's like it means nothing. Honestly, yeah. It means zero to them. They are going to be the number one seed. They're going to host all that stuff. If they win the regional, they're going to host Super Regional. But, you know, if for them, hey, why not add another to your list of achievements? And it may well be Tennessee against if Vanderbilt can beat Ole Miss in the 8-9 game, then it will be Vanderbilt, Tennessee on Thursday? I think that's right.
I believe so.
So, chance for Vanderbilt to get back to Tennessee, but I don't even know what to think of Vanderbilt right now.
Well, let's go there because it's been a rocky season for Vanderbilt by their standards. Now, they're still a very good baseball team, but the lineup, I think, has been way more inconsistent than most people thought it would be to this point. It did not go well for Vanderbilt this weekend. What do you make of kind of the spot that they're in right now? You know, we've seen you know, Tim Corbin coach teams figure it out as the season goes along and play their best baseball in the postseason. So we'll see if that can happen again this year. But something just kind of feels off by their standards.
Well, the thing is, you're right about the lineup. That's kind of been the thing all year. I mean, it hasn't. It's been, you know, kind of up and down. I mean, it hasn't been great. And at times they've wanted for offense. But like last weekend, they go to Arkansas, a you know, top five team, and they win a series.
Yep.
And so they're coming back home with a chance, the real chance to host in the NCAA tournament. And like they've got a ton of talented pitchers. They don't have, they probably don't, you know, haven't had enough like consistent, excellent pitching, but they've got a lot of pitching. And if, for the most part, it's been very good. The bullpen's very, very good. They lose, how many runs they give up? Let me see if I can do this. They gave up 42 runs in a three-game sweep at the hands of LSU.
Yeah.
And they were up, what, 8-4?
They're up 8-4 to start the seventh inning.
Yeah, on Sunday. Lose 21-10. So, like, in one weekend, their pitching just melted down completely. So, that's tough because, you know, so now they end up with a losing record in the SEC, which, again, you know, like you said, it's still a very good team. I would not want to – you know, the thing is, they're going to be on the road now for the first weekend of the – you know, for regional. And there's going to be a host once. It's just going to be like, you got to be kidding me, you know? Like, you don't want to see them. But at the same time, you know, it's been they're certainly a flawed team. And as it turns out, you know, it's funny because so they end up, what, 35-19, 14-16. Go back to that Tennessee sweep, which at the time was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it's exactly what should have happened now that we've seen both these teams play out. I mean, Tennessee's just much, much better this year.
What did you make of Tim Corbin on Saturday? So, you know, I'm following along with the game and, like we said, they're up 8-4 in the seventh inning, and then all of a sudden, it's 21-9. Vanderbilt eventually makes it 21-10, and that's the final score. They lose, they get swept over the weekend by LSU, and Tim Corbin, not really much time for the media after that, and walks out of the field. And I think Spencer Jones was the guy that got sent out there. What did you make? Look, we've talked about this before. Tim Corbin does not love losing. I don't know that I've ever seen anyone hate losing more than Tim Corbin hates losing. So we've talked about that several times here on the show. Not a great look for Tim Corbin over the weekend. What did you think of his decision to just basically blow things off on Saturday?
As you're asking me that, I'm looking on Twitter. Michelle has this freaking replay of me slapping myself. Darn you, Michelle. Corbin may have done that after the game.
He might have.
He actually has said at one point after some loss, didn't he say something like, I'm going to hit myself with a hammer? Yeah. So, I, as a rule, I don't like it. You know, I don't like it. I think you've got to, if media there to cover you, like, you know, you're the coach, you've got to talk. I do. I mean, with him, I honestly, having seen him after losses, and that, considering what that loss was and what that series was and how, you know, again, it looked like maybe they were starting to gear up here, and all of a sudden it's like, no, actually, how about a complete meltdown and a sweep? I'd say a little bit of grace to Tim Corbin on this one, you know? It probably wouldn't have been a joyous occasion for the assembled media anyway. Not – I don't know who was there. I mean, Aria for sure. Aria Gerst from the Tennessean, who has done a fantastic job of covering this team. Like, if there's a beat writer out there who covers a beat, who is more dug in on the intricacies of a team, I mean, show them to me. I think Aria's been amazing. Aria and I think Gentry was there. I don't know. Maybe some TV. So it wasn't a ton of people. But, yeah, that kind of tells you where they are right now. Very frustrating for them.
So – where do they go from here? Because it's kind of been, you know, like you said, they'll show up and they'll go beat Arkansas in a weekend series. Then it goes really poorly for them, like LSU. Like Tennessee, you know what the expectation is heading in. Like, I think it's reached the point, and this is probably not fair, but it's reached the point with some of their fan base where it's going to be national title or bust for this team, just based on how good they are. We know what the expectation is for those guys. What is your expectation for this Vanderbilt team heading into the postseason? Because hosting is out the door now, I think.
Well, speaking of Aria, and you know, we'll have to get her on here soon as a postseason progressive, but she had a good point that like they really like they need, you know, Vanderbilt's been a much better road team than home team for whatever reason this year. But they've had some really good success away from home, and they've had just some really bad moments at home. They need like a northern, like hot weather is not good. This is a pitching staff that challenges hitters, a lot of fastballs, and you know, they give up home runs. So she had a good point. Like maybe, you know, somewhere a little bit north or a little bit cooler or something like that might help them. Look, if you tell me right now Vanderbilt's going to be in a super regional, I'm okay. Like, I'm not going to be that surprised. They've got still a lot of really good players. You know, Enrique Bradfield is a catalyst for that team. They've got a lot of arms. You know, they've got, you know, you got guys, you got like Dom Keegan's having a great year. I mean, Spencer Jones. I mean, they've got a lineup with some talent. It's just they haven't been able to put it all together consistently. And, you know, Carter Holton got the weekend off. You know, the freshman, really good player. I mean, they've got arms, you know. Fetrella, I mean, Maldonado, all these, they've got talent, but I don't know. After this last weekend, I could see that being a sign of just rough things to come, or maybe it's a galvanizing moment for them. I feel like Hoover is probably important for them to get some momentum and confidence going.
Yeah, and we'll see if they could do that starting later this week in the SEC baseball tournament. But I did not expect, going back to the Tennessee-Vanderbilt series, when Tennessee swept them, that was kind of an eyebrow raiser for me. But my immediate thought was, well, it's Vanderbilt. They'll be fine. I mean, they'll be fine coming down the stretch. It's been a little bit more rocky than I expected it to be for Vanderbilt this year. And I think there is some uneasiness. Now, look, big picture, that program's going to be fine. Tim Corbin's in charge. They're going to be fine. But this season, I think, has been way more rocky than most Vanderbilt fans thought it would be coming in.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, of course, I'm not going to be shocked if it happens. I really thought this year we might be talking about both of them in Omaha again. Still yep. Could happen. But if things continue as they're going, it's going to be Vanderbilt fans gritting their teeth as, you know, Tennessee, you know, goes deep into the postseason. So, I mean, at this point, I would say it's like, I love this thing. Like the whole like, oh, now you care about baseball.
Yeah.
No. It's fine. But like, now I'm seeing some things like, you know, the Vol Twitter and this stuff can be hilarious. Like, oh, you don't know. You've never known anything about baseball till now. And I'm like, see, like, that sounds like something you say to someone who's like a new soccer fan or whatever. Like, you know, baseball's, I mean, like, not everybody, but I mean, people are pretty familiar with
baseball.
You know, people are familiar with the sport. Yeah. This isn't like lacrosse or something, you know? But man, people, oh, the hatred for the Vols.
Oh,
and Vitello,
it's running. If they lose in like the super regional and they're out, the amount of it's going to be something on social media. It's going to be amazing.
Did you see the video, Ben McKee video that I retweeted the other
day? Oh, yeah.
Dude, that was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Feeding each other turkey legs. I mean, you got to love this team.
We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, some interesting comments from John Hines that I think may signal what the future could look like at top four on defense for the Predators. We'll get to that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and you can make every game feel like Game 7 on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay every single week. You'll get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel has so many different ways to play, and best of all, when you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. I think Golden State and Dallas is over. I think Golden State is going to complete the sweep coming up in Game 4. Miami-Boston, very interesting. Game 4 coming up tonight in the Eastern Conference Final. I think the Celtics win tonight, but give me Bam Adebayo over on points again as well. I think he's found his groove offensively. But you take it any way you want to take it. If you're new to FanDuel, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up with promo code ROB to get your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. Once again, that promo code is ROB. And if you already have an account, you're all set to bet. Either way, you'll get up to $20 in free bets if your same-game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet of $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So, we discussed the John Hines-David Poyle press conference last week, and obviously a lot to sift through there last Friday morning here on the show. Lots of things said by John Hines and David Poyle on Thursday in the formal part of the press conference. But, Joe, I caught up with John Hines after the formal part of the press conference and talked about Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier specifically and their roles in the top four. We've talked about that a lot this year. Did you see the proper growth from Fabbro and Carrier? Was not really all that impressed with either one of them in the playoffs with the way they played. Now, get in line of people I wasn't overly impressed with against the Colorado Avalanche. I understand that. But the question that I have is, do you feel good enough that Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier are good enough in the top four for you to win and win at a high level as you move forward? And I talked to John Hines about that on Thursday after the press conference. Here's what Preds head coach John Hines had to say about the top four on defense.
Now we know what kind of players Josi and Ekholm are, obviously. What's your confidence level right now in Fabbro and Carrier in terms of being those top four reliable guys on a consistent basis?
Yeah, I think those guys have done a good job, and we've seen definitely growth and progression. I think they both have to have a big offseason. I think when you look at the NHL now and you look at, they're not the biggest players, so their strength and their speed and their ability to be able to compete in the defensive areas, that's got to take another step. I think when we look in the playoffs and some of those elite level players, that's got to be at a different level. But I think they both bring, like, they both can move the puck, they both are good skaters, so they got to utilize those things. I think to a strong point, they both progress. We're both from playing their first 82 game schedule, but we'd like to see another step for them to be, solidified top four at a level that can help you win down the stretch and win a playoff round and make a run. And right now, our team and those guys aren't at that level.
Nice mute for me after that. It was good stuff.
Happy Monday.
So that was John Hines on Thursday talking about Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier. Now, there's a few things that stand out to me, Joe, from those comments. You talked about it being the first 82-game season and that those guys took a step, and I would agree with that. I think they both took a step at times this year. He also said, they're not the biggest guys, and they've got to work on their strength and skating, and said right now they're not at a level that you can win down the stretch in the playoffs with in terms of, on a consistent basis, top four guys. I don't know. Does that signal that maybe the Predators could be looking to add on defense this offseason? Maybe looking for another top four guy. What did you make of those comments from John Hines about Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier?
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to match that up with what Poyle does, because I think that's possible. I still primarily am focused on, what forwards are they getting? What forward with a little S in the parentheses that are they getting? But you can make a case, that maybe they're better off with one of those guys dropping down. I don't know. It's tough. Like, I guess with Fabbro, I thought he'd have more offensive impact by now. But I guess also if you're just struggling in general, you're trying to figure out some things, maybe it's just harder to get to that. I don't know. I think he obviously, last year he was a healthy scratch quite a bit.
Yeah.
He took a step, but just not as much as you would hope. Carrier, I still think, of the two, I think Carrier probably is in better position. I don't think he's as skilled as Fabbro, but I think he's probably a more sound bet moving forward that he's going to be in the top four. Fabbro, to me, is like, it's just a big question. Fabbro and Tolvanen, are two guys who, like, you definitely thought, well, I guess with Tolvanen, you definitely thought you'd get more this year. With Fabbro, that was a big question in the year. He started to answer it, but where is it going from here? I don't know. So now they have an off season. They have all the information. There's no new information coming on him. What would you do?
Well, I mean, look, I said in Call Your Shot Friday last week that I think Dante Fabbro will be traded this offseason.
So that's what you would do?
That's not necessarily what I would do. Like, I think, honestly, right now, I think he's better served on their third pair. I really do. Like, he's 23. I think that's the thing to remember. It feels like he's been here forever because he's been here for a while now. I mean, back to 2019. In some ways, that feels like a different lifetime ago is when he first came in for that playoff series.
He's kind of a victim of doing so well then.
Yeah, well, but I mean, just think about how well he fit in immediately. He came in, and the third pair was him and Hamus, and that was their best defense pairing in the playoffs that year. I mean, they were really good together. So, I mean, there's been expectation since then. I mean, it's not just, you know, fan-base expectation. It was David Poile expectation, too. We talk about him moving on from P.K. Subban to bring in the money to get Matt Duchene, and that was a lot of it. He also had a lot of confidence in Dante Fabbro that he was going to be able to step in and, you know, play that top four role. Did they maybe bring that along too quickly? I think so. I think they kind of realized that at the moment, too, that they brought him along maybe before he was ready to play in that role. But now, you know, he's 23 years old. He'll be 24 coming up in June. You know, we talk about him getting bigger. I don't know how much bigger he's going to get. Like, I just, you know, you can get obviously faster and stronger as you continue to improve. But that's kind of the second offseason. I remember the conversation last year around Fabbro was, well, he needs to get bigger and he needs to be stronger on his skates. And that was kind of the message from John Hines. And now we're playing comments again about how, well, they're not the biggest guys, so they need to be stronger and they need to be faster on their skates. And I'm just like, well,
at some point you are what you are, right? Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah, Fabbro's never going to be like Shea Weber.
No. So it just made me wonder, like, I think both of those guys are good players. Like, Dante Fabbro, some people take this too far. He's an NHL defenseman. I just don't know that he's a top-pairing NHL guy right now. I thought there were some moments this year where he looked really good alongside Roman Josi. And then there were some moments where he didn't. I mean, the inconsistency was just, and I think even more so toward the end of the year when the competition started to get raised up and the schedule was tougher and you were playing so many games in the last month of the season there, I thought he struggled a little bit more. The fact of the matter is, you know, we talked about this even before Saros went out. Everybody's going to focus on the forwards this offseason, and I understand it. They need to go get some help in the top six. But the fact of the matter is their defense was atrocious coming down the stretch. And I wonder if they take a look both at top six forward and a top four defenseman this offseason. I think there's a chance they will.
Text line, Devin from Dover asking about Ference.
Yeah. I don't know that he's going to be NHL ready next year. From what I've heard and from people that I've kind of talked to down there, it was kind of up and down with him this year. So I don't know that he's going to be – I know there's a lot of hype on him coming out of college, and I really liked him as a player, and he got a couple of games up here in the NHL. I don't know that he's going to be ready. That's the other thing. Like, they've spent so much time trying to address the forward position in the draft, and I think they've done a better – I mean, you got Tomasino, you drafted Tolvanen, you had two forwards in the first round basically this past year. Like, you've done a good job of addressing forwards, and we'll see as they continue to grow and develop, if they progress into what they hope they can be. I mean, when's the last time they drafted a defenseman high? It was Dante Fabbro. That was 2016. The pipeline is not really that full of defensemen coming up. Maybe that's another area you got to look at. I mean, it's the draft, so they could draft
a defenseman. And we know they can do that well.
Yeah, and they can. I mean, they've done that well throughout the history of their franchise, but there's not very many guys that they have coming up right now on that side that are really all that explosive. Like, people are waiting on Jeremy Davies to take that next step. And to me, Jeremy Davies is what he is. He's a really good AHL defenseman, and he's probably a 7 or 8 NHL defenseman. Like, that's what he is. I don't know that he's going to get a whole lot better than that.
Yeah. Ference coming along would be that would be very important here moving forward.
Yeah, I mean they've got to find some depth there, and like that's the thing, you can't draft everything, and that's another reason why you look back at the second round pick and you're like, okay. At least you took a defenseman with it, with Jeremy Lozon that you traded away. But
he better be good.
He better be pretty good. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Should the Preds look at adding another top four defenseman this offseason? We'll continue that conversation next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game.
I would say that, you know, we got to add some players or find some groups that we can strengthen our team, strengthen our depth, and be able to surround the core players with the style of players. I think that can help them be great, but also have our team more competitive in the hardest part of the schedule and into the playoffs.
That was John Hines at the press conference last Thursday discussing some moves that the Predators could make this offseason to get better, whether that's via free agency, via trade, via draft, what have you. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So we played the clip, the last segment, talking about Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier. John Hines saying it's an important offseason for both of them. They both need to get a little bit bigger, need a little get a little bit stronger on their skates coming down the stretch too. Now, look, I thought especially in the first round, I thought Carrier got overwhelmed a few times in terms of Colorado was just in your face all the time, and they force you to either muscle your way out of there or get really good passes, crisp decisions coming out of the zone. I thought Carrier just got picked off a couple of times, and Colorado was able to hem him in. So you can learn from that. It is easy to kind of forget this is his first 82-game NHL season. Both those guys are still very young. If I'm the Predators moving forward, I don't know that both of those guys are your ideal top four defensemen. I mean, not everybody can be Roman Josi and Mattias Ekholm. I understand that. So, you know, you got Ekholm on starting to enter into the back part of his career. Josi's in the prime right now, but you're going to have to figure out who are those next guys in the top four as you move forward here. And I just don't know. I'm not convinced that it's on their roster or in their organization right now. So I'm not saying that top four defensemen would be my top priority this offseason. I still think adding to your top six needs to be the number one goal for the Predators. But if there's a top four guy out there, and maybe not, I'm not talking like John Klingberg or anybody that's going to make $8 or $9 million this offseason, but maybe more of a veteran guy that can fill in on the top four. He's not a superstar, but a stay-at-home kind of guy that you can get for $4.5-5 million a year. I'd probably entertain that if I'm the Predators this offseason.
Would you enter – I mean, if you're going to do something like that, that's another forward that, you know, that maybe you could have signed.
Yeah.
I mean, would you look at it like 1-1 as opposed to, like, trying to get 2-4? And, again, we're talking about all this stuff, and I think under the assumption that Forsberg signs, you know, so
– honestly, if it was me – and I don't know if they'll do this or not, but if it was me, assuming Forsberg is back, which is an assumption, but assuming Forsberg is back, I would target one top six guy and one top four defenseman. That's me. That's how I would handle it. Now, I know there are some people that say, no, go get two top six guys and the defense is what it is. You can worry about that later. But I would go one top six guy, one defenseman, and I would hope that Tomasino comes in next year and is a dude. Mm-hmm. In your top six.
Yeah.
That's the way I'd go about it.
Which I could see happening. I think, you know, he's like, you look at a Tomasino, and he is, it's clear, like, he's young, he's talented, he's going to be good, and also he's, like, big offseason. You can see how that'll pay off for him.
Yep.
You know, like, Fabbro, to your point, yeah, like, Hines says the same thing every, you know, it's like, okay, so at what point has he just kind of reached his limit of what he's going to be physically, you know?
Well, I can tell you this. I mean, I talked to John Hines off to the side a little bit the other day. They're very excited about Tomasino. Like, I think it's fair to say that his rookie year probably went better than they hoped it would in terms of his ability to learn how to play the game at the NHL level. You know, he basically admitted, you know, after game one that The game one was too much for him, like the playoffs. He'd never experienced anything like that before. And then he came back, and they thought he responded really well in games three and four after that as well. So I think that they feel really good about him. My question with him is, can he get big enough to where he can kind of use that power game a little bit more? I think speed-wise, he's there. He's got great vision. He makes great plays with the puck. I think the next step to his game, I think getting to the middle of the ice on a more consistent basis has got to be something that happens for him. And
that's where Philip Forsberg
went. Yeah, and Philip Forsberg went through the exact same thing. Like, it was different with Forsberg because he was coming over from Europe and had to learn, you know, how to play on North American ice. It's the same thing we've talked about with Tolvanen. Tomasino knows that. I mean, he's played in Canada and the United States his whole life. So he knows how to play on North American ice. It's just a simple fact of getting bigger. I think Forsberg, from his first full year in Milwaukee to his first year in the NHL, he gained like 12 pounds of muscle. Like, it was – he put in a lot of work. I'm not saying Tomasino's going to get that big, but it's a big offseason for him in terms of being a little bit sturdier out there.
Yeah, and obviously it's helped Forsberg a lot, being a power forward. Yeah, Tomasino, yeah, I don't think he's going to be that kind of guy. He's going to be butt-checking people all over the place.
Probably not.
But you can see what that would do for him. So, yeah, so he'll – you can count him, I think, as you're feeling good about him as a top six guy. I guess it's just, you know, it's just hard because I want, you know, it's who exactly are we talking about, and even then what kind of impact are you talking about, you know? But I hear what you're saying. I mean, the idea of splitting it up, you could also, though. I mean, that's the thing. It's those two guys. It's just how are you feeling about the ceiling. I feel like Fabbro has always been considered the guy with the really high ceiling, you know, and I do feel like there's a lot more offensive game there than we see, but maybe that's been a little bit overstated.
Well, look, I think I want to be careful with how I say this because I'm not trying to compare him apples to apples. I think the way that he plays the game is more in the mold of like Ryan Suter in terms of he doesn't really do anything flashy offensively. Like, Suter is a great player, but Suter, if you watch him play, like there's maybe like five times a year where Suter does something and you're like, how about that offensively? Like, I kind of view Fabbro in the same way. He can pass. Is the biggest thing that I think Fabbro does really well, he gets the puck up ice very quickly and does it very well, and his stretch pass is really good. Now, sometimes that gets him in trouble, and he turns the puck over the other way. But he does a really good job of that. The point you bring up about the ceiling, I think, is really interesting, and that's the question that John Hines and David Poile and the Predators have to figure out. You have, as the moment, you have 174 games of sample size in the regular season with Dante Fabbro, and then you've got some playoff games thrown in there a little bit as well. Like, how much better do you think he's going to get? That's kind of the question you have to answer. I think he can get better. I think he can. I still think he's got, you know, tools wise, the ability to be a top four defenseman. If you're the Predators, you have to answer the question of, all right, do you think he's going to get there or do you not? And if you don't, may need to go address that this offseason.
Keith from Bowling Green on the text line, driven by WilsonCunningham.com, said as bad as Carrier was, they better look for two top four defensemen. Well, they can't add everything. You know, there are limitations to what they can do. Devin from Dover asks, how close is Tolvanen to being in a Fiala situation and being traded? I think that that's something to possibly talk about. A young player with some promise, a Fabbro, a Tolvanen, you know, do they look to move any of these guys?
They could. I mean, the thing is, like, if you're trading Tolvanen, what are you getting back for him? Like, Fiala to me was in a different spot because there had been enough flashes where you're like, okay, that guy can play.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't really seen a whole lot of that. Like, Tolvanen, we talked about it a few weeks ago.
About 6 weeks.
He's got about a 15-game stretch where he was like, woo, okay.
Was that all it was?
It's 15 games. Well, I mean, look, he was good that year.
So, 4 weeks.
But when you break down just purely production of the goals going in, it was basically 15 games.
It was a heater.
Yeah. And that's basically what you have from Tolvanen at the NHL level. I just don't know. I don't know what you're getting back for him.
Like a year ago, you could have traded him off that,
yeah.
And I think you'd you'd find some interest. You'd find more interest than you would now.
And the other part about him is, like, his contract is so cheap that I almost wonder if you're the Predators, let's weigh risk-reward of trading him and then him figuring it out somewhere else, or just paying him a relatively little amount of money and maybe hoping he figures it out here. I mean, this people are going to roll their eyes when I say this. He did figure out a lot of his game this year in terms of what they've been asking him to do away from the puck. The offense just totally dried up.
Yeah.
And you put the whole picture together next year.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that helped Duchesne, right?
Yep.
But, like it led to offense at times for him. It did not for Tolvanen. I still have no idea. Like, it's like a – I mean, it was like a pitcher who just came off Tommy John.
Yeah.
Like, the fastball's gone.
It was weird.
No, I'm not saying it was like he has, like, you know, like Justin Bradford's slap shot, okay? I don't know why I'm taking a shot at him. I'm just thinking of the mighty drunks.
Bradford's got a great shot.
I'm thinking of my favorite beer league hockey players, Bradford.
See his golfer,
and Gover.
Golf cart video, Justin Bradford.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Go look on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
No, I did not. I will. But it lost something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think – clearly, it did. So, how do you get that back? I mean,
that's his superpower.
Well, and then you know, in the Colorado series, he'll come out with a quick snapper, and you're just like, okay, well, where's that been all year long?
That looked like what we thought we'd see a lot more this year. So, but that's the thing. When you bring up great points, like, yeah, you can move him, but then right now you're not paying him much. What if he does actually have a bounce back next year? And then you're like, gosh, he actually could have fit into this top six that needs work.
It's an interesting spot for them to be in. We'll continue to take your thoughts. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans. Could there be a position out there of need for the Titans that they could still address via free agency? We'll get into that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025-1063, The Game.